Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Today, we're going to talk about how overcoming egocentricity increases self-control. We have a lot of people today who let their egos get the best of their decision-making. We'll talk about that. Always the latest on health and nutrition. We go around the world every day. We look at quality universities and institutions, see what they've come up with that is not in the mainstream media that you need to know about. Always cutting edge. Always peer-reviewed. Then we're going to play a couple audio clips. One is from a young liberal woman in college who dared to suggest that a professor had some good ideas and just to have a discussion. For that, she was attacked. So her freedoms of speech, which she took for granted, and especially as a lifetime feminist activist, was challenging to her. So she responds. Guess where she is now? Well, after repeated attacks, she now has walked away from the Democratic liberal establishment. She hasn't gone to the right or the Republicans. She's just independent. But I want you to hear what she has to say, because I'm hearing from a lot of people who are just fed up with the infantilism, the immaturity, the lack of consciousness within many of these movements, especially the identity politics movements, which I feel are destroying our society. We're going to have a little conversation on that. I'd like your feedback. Please call in after these segments and share them. Also today, it's flu season, and tens of millions of Americans are getting their flu shots in drugstores, doctor's offices. Is it a good thing? Well, if you believe the CDC and all the official governmental agencies, absolutely, it can prevent the flu. And if you're older, it can save your life. Good. Then I would highly recommend everyone get a flu shot. Well, maybe we should just look at the actual evidence before we do that. That's reasonable, right? What does the actual peer review gold standard science say about the ingredients in the flu vaccine, the efficacy of it, the safety of it? That's reasonable, right? Well, we've done that, and I'm going to give a special, in-depth, original investigative report on the flu vaccines today. We are posting the article also. Also, a lot of people travel. A lot of people want to hear the show, so there's two ways you can do it. You can listen live over your land-based, what is called a terrestrial station. Like in New York, we have our sister station, WBAI, where I've been on for 42 years and still happy to be here. But also a lot of people all over the world. Interesting, I got a call last night on my radio show on Progressive Commentary Hour, and the caller was from Trinidad. Another was from Thailand. So we're always interested in hearing where you're calling from and where you're listening from. So we try to select topics that impact a person no matter where they live. We're also doing more on the environment than any other radio program in the world. And we're accelerating how much we're doing. So more articles. Next week, two brand new articles on the environment. One on what can we do when no one else is doing anything. In fact, one of the articles is why with all the good science, aren't we doing more? We'll explore that. And now you can always listen by a portable device, and that's how most people download their radio shows today, right off their cell phone. Here's the number to call in live and listen. We also have our own app, prn.fm. Here's the number to call, 424-203-8046. Again, 424-203-8046. Can't listen live? Download when you can. Call 710 719-919-7676, 710-719-9976. From the University of Zurich, the question is, what can we do to tame or control our egos and our need for instantaneous gratification? In other words, bring some self-control into our lives. For example, should I buy a car now, or maybe I should save that money in case I lose my job, or maybe for my retirement? Now, such situations require self-control in order to resist the immediate temptation offered for the sale of more important outcomes in the future. And it's widely accepted that self-control is regulated by mechanisms in the brain. It's an area called the prefrontal cortex. And with the ability to keep oneself at bay, in other words, go to neutral, think things through. What is the likely outcome of the choice I'm about to make, the words I'm about to say, the emotions I'm about to share? Am I being considerate? Am I concerned about how other people may misinterpret what I'm about to share? We really have a moral responsibility in our communications to think through these thoughts, but we don't. Most don't. We're tempted always by immediately appealing offers, that instantaneous urge to buy. For example, if you go to a shopping mart or a farmer's market, it's always best to make a list. Why? Because if you stick to the list, except for unique items that you might see for the first time, you're not going to be doing compulsive buying. And there's a reason why your most popular selling items in any store are at the 3 foot to 5 foot level, because that's what you're going to look at. You're not going to look at the ones down on the ground. You're not going to look way up. So it makes it really easy for people. And those are generally the most unhealthy items. That's just one example. So if we knew what we were going to buy when we went in, we would save money, we would shorten our shopping time, and we would bring back what we actually needed. Now, a study from a team at the Department of Economics, University of Zurich, and the University of Dusseldorf in Germany shows that a second mechanism is also important for self-control. Being able to direct attention to your future needs. To their own surprise, they found that this same brain area also plays a crucial role in situations requiring self-control when no other person is present. Let me give you an example of this. Let's say that you're looking for a piece of property, and you find a piece of property, but you want one close to the water, because it's always been more aesthetic to have something that's got a magnificent view, what I call the wow factor. We're not able to create the wow factor. Nature creates it for us. We can do everything around it, but you want that special thing. So you've got a house, and you think, that's it. Look at that view of the mountains, of the desert, of the river, the lake, the stream, the ocean. We, at that moment, have to think forward. That's where this article is important. Self-control says, will this be the best place for me to invest my life savings, to incur debt in 10 years from now? Well, if it's Florida, Georgia, the entire East Coast of the United States, if it's in Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, California, 90% of Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, the answer is think again. Because of the extremes of environmental impact, you're likely to end up losing the house or having it damaged. Your insurance won't cover it, and you don't have backup savings that you could put another $20,000, $50,000, or $100,000 into repairs. And then you're going to have to do it again and again and again. So the immediate impact is, this is wonderful. Look at this deal. Wow, I want to be here. But hold that control and say, does it suit my future? And if we did things that suited our future, we wouldn't be using our credit cards all the time. We wouldn't be incurring debt as we do. We wouldn't have to have all the stuff in our lives. We began to live a more austere existence. We would live a more a more quality of life existence. I posted a picture this morning on my Facebook. And by the way, the last time I actually looked, I think it was, 3 years ago, there were 7 million people that day up on my Facebook. I don't know how many there are now. There might be 2. I don't know. I don't really care. It's there for whoever wants to see stuff. And I try to post articles and videos that warm the heart, that inspire us, that brings a tear to our eyes when you see how wonderful human beings can be. Today I posted one where a simple shot, there was a horse walking across a wooden bridge, but its little colt had got stuck. So the mother was standing beside it, but it couldn't get out. And a passerby came, and you see him, he's filming. He wasn't filming them, he's filming, and then he puts his camera down, he goes over, and he works with the little mare and picks her up and carries her off the bridge to safety, and the mother's right beside her, and they go happily away. Little gesture, but to me a very important gesture. Someone willing to care about a creature, that shows character. And I love to post those. I post them all the time. I post one of them, a mother gorilla giving birth to a baby and then nursing it. So much love. Just one of those wonderful little videos for 2 minutes you watch, and it just makes you feel warm. So I try to balance it with the best that humans can be, the importance of sentient creatures, why we would never want to see them killed or tortured like dogs and cats, where other countries they're eaten. And then hard-hitting stories and about whatever it is, and inspiring stories. And there was a picture of, I'm assuming, that it was a California massive traffic. And because I've been on that road, I recognize the road. It's coming in from the north of Los Angeles. And it was just miles of six lanes, bumper to bumper. You're in pollution. It's taking an enormous amount of time to commute. And right beside it was a juxtaposed photograph of a guy sitting by a stream in a forest. It could have been any forest in America. It was beautiful, with a running stream. And one is making a living, and the other is enjoying life. And I put it there to get people to think, and each person thinks differently. But my hope was people would stop and ask themselves, why do you commute from a home that's not your ideal, maybe at one of the bedroom communities, and now from New York City, where I'm at right now, you could commute from New Paltz an hour and a half each way, 3 hours a day in traffic, large carbon footprint, not healthy. When you could live in a different community with a better quality of life, more time for your friends, family, and yourself to do the things you find important. And the idea is you're working at a job you may not like that pays for you to be able to live in that community that you do not like. So what is the purpose of that negative feedback loop? If you're going to work at something you like. If you're going to live someplace you like. But we all think that somehow we're magnetized to be drawn into this power center of New York. If you've been here a long time and you're fortunate enough to have a rent-controlled apartment or rent-stabilized apartment or a brownstone in Brooklyn, good. But 51% of all the people living in Manhattan live below the poverty line. 51%. They never promote those people. You don't see them in ads. Come to New York City and see how many poor people we have. And of course, nothing's being done to help these people. And that's the tragedy. So I think it's time for us to start looking now at where are the best places in our wonderful country to live that are sustainable, have quality of life, slow down the pace of life, and be able to appreciate every day. When you wake up in the morning, you feel good waking up. The ideal life is to live this one where you don't have to be any place the rest of your life, because you've balanced what it takes to meet your needs, which are not excessive, with the environment you're in. Otherwise, no matter how much money you make, it'll never be enough if you're insecure. You're always going to be spending more than what you're making. and hence this debt loop cycle. Just a thought. That study is what brought that to my mind. I've recommended you take resveratrol, res, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, resveratrol, for a long time. It helps the heart, it's anti-aging. But now there's a new reason to take it. According to University of California at San Diego, it helps correct hormone imbalance in women with PCOS. Now, first of all, you may not know this if you're just listening for the first time, but resveratrol is a natural compound found in grapes. And it can help address a hormone imbalance in women with polycystic ovary syndrome. That's a leading cause of infertility in women. And according to this new study that I read in Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, 6 million women in the United States have this. And that's important. So now we have something that can help them. So if you know a woman who has PCOS, tell her to take resveratrol. I'm suggesting that they take DHEAS, that's a dehydroepidesterone sulfate. It's another hormone that the body can convert into testosterone. They have to know how to balance the hormones. One of the ways you can, if you have this condition, is by taking resveratrol. I mention a lot the Mediterranean diet for good reason. It's the best diet we could take. You could do an individualized tailored diet that could be better, but not by much. Full of fruits. Well, the latest study, University of Coimbra in Portugal, is that the Mediterranean diet and fruit can lower the risk of age-related macular degeneration. And this was just presented at the American Academy of Ophthalmology's, and they looked at the Mediterranean diet and said, wow, the research shows that these nutrients in fruits and vegetables and grains helps protect against macular degeneration. And that's good. We want to have healthy vision. We want to protect our eyes. Now, right now, with flu season, I would suggest vitamin D because it builds the immune system. But the University of Oslo, which is in Norway, showed that vitamin D also is associated with an increased impact upon people with psychotic disorders, negative and depressive symptoms. So make sure you're getting enough vitamin D, because if you're low in vitamin D, if you don't have enough, it increases psychotic episodes. And here's the problem. A lot of people taking antipsychotic medication end up with low levels. Exercise can benefit elderly men with memory and thinking problems, University of British Columbia. Exercise can be associated with a benefit for people over the age of 70 and thinking. It improves thinking. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, Journal of the American Academy of Neurology. And I'm suggesting to improve vascular cognitive improvements and help repair damage to the small blood vessels in the brain, vitamin E, 400 units twice a day, tocotrienols, 200 units twice a day, and the B-complex, along with quercetin and acetyl-L-carnitine, all good for the brain. Also, for people who've made major changes in your diet, I'd like to hear what your changes are. Send me the changes and the outcomes. I'm particularly interested in people who might not have been healthy on a standard American diet, switched over to a vegan diet, and now are healthier. I'd like to go through them and read them on the air, hopefully motivate other people. Also, Harvard School of Public Health found that flavonoids, that's what you get when you eat your oranges and grapefruits and onions, can improve important health in anti-aging. Women with the highest average intakes of flavonoids and anthocyanins and flavanols had the greatest odds of healthy aging, meaning no major chronic diseases or major impairment in cognitive or physical function or mental health. The findings further substantiated by consistent data from the flavonoid-rich foods, oranges, berries, onions, apples. Apples are very good. This was at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, also the French National Institutes of Health and Medical Research, and the University of Bordeaux, all participated. Quote, flavonoids may contribute to reducing chronic disease, maintaining physical, cognitive, and mental health with aging via the potential to decrease oxidative stress and inflammation, which are two general pathways underlying many age-related chronic diseases and conditions. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So, eat your fruits, slow down the aging process, follow a Mediterranean diet, have a healthier heart, exercise, live longer. Oh, and I'll add one more in. University of Missouri, weight lifting can help reverse bone loss in men. It's not a minor problem. Nearly 2 million men in the United States have osteoporosis. That's a condition that makes bones weak and prone to breakage. But another 16 million have low bone mass. A new study suggests certain weightlifting exercises like squats, deadlifts, and leg presses can increase bone mass. That's important. So have stronger legs, stronger muscle mass in your legs also by doing those exercises. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break. We are 22 minutes into our program. And when we come back, I want to, by the way, mulberry is a new study. It just came to my mind. Mulberries can activate brown fat, and that can help you lose weight. So a lot of people don't eat mulberries. That was from the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing. And the brown fat is our adipose tissue. And so the mulberries you eat, and they're delicious. You can eat them. I have a couple of mulberry trees. I just love to go up in the trees. I take a little sack. I put it over my shoulder, and I just sit up there and eat one, throw one in the bag, and then feed it to the animals. They love them too. But you can eat the dried mulberries. They're terrific. Oh, and if you want to have a cleaner brain, clearing metabolites, the omega-3 fatty acids. That was done through the Federation of American Society of Experimental Biology. So a healthier brain requires the omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids. You can find it in plants. You can find it in fish. But both help you, and that's especially important for people with Alzheimer's. So we're going to take a break and come back, and then I'm going to share an original report on vaccines. And then we're going to go to an audio clip, and then you'll have an opportunity to call in. I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. Back in a moment.
I know you don't know what I'm going through. Standing here looking at you, well, let me tell you that it hurts so bad. It makes me feel so sad. It makes me hurt so bad.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Back in New York this week because I have so much to do with films. Our newest film is done. We did a sneak screening and came back in to do some final editing, shorten it up a bit. And I did almost 60 hours of filming over the last 2 weeks. And you'll be seeing that, plus two additional major documentaries. So I have to sit and go over these with my senior editor. And so then I go back on the road tomorrow. And I am planning on a screening. I just have to fit it into my schedule about 2 months ahead. So I'll let everyone know when we're going to do a screening. Right now, it's vaccine season. I'm sure you've all heard the ads. get your vaccines, protect yourself from what otherwise could be death or injury. The trouble is, we've only been given one side of the story, and I believe in freedom of choice. So if you want to vaccinate yourself with the flu vaccine or any vaccine, that's your right, and I'm not going to interfere in that. But let's just say that you're not a scientist, you're not a scholar, you do not have the knowledge of where to look, and even if you're looking at a scientific article, would you be able to understand what it's stating? So we do that for you. We take it very seriously. I've authored over 700 original articles, over 300 groundbreaking articles, investigative reporting, and a lot that I used to publish in magazines, 58 cover stories, but now we do over the internet because we can reach an audience immediately and a much larger audience. And we footnote everything. I don't use anonymous sources. And we vet every single article. So you'll be able to read this article on vaccines. Are they safe and effective later on today? Is, like it or not, it's again upon us. And the CDC's massive campaign of fear tactics to compel every citizen to rush to the doctors, hospitals, and pharmacies to get vaccinated is underway. We've witnessed this ritual many times. It has become an annual ritual for the world's most heavily vaccinated population, right here in the United States. Mainstream media outlets blast us with stories of the first influenza deaths and images of small children getting vaccinated. And this pageantry will continue for the next 3 or 4 months. The government has a lot of vaccines to get rid of, and they can think that they're helping people, but are they? And the only reason we're all getting vaccinated, or many people, is because the media is doing their advertising for them. However, popular attitudes towards the value of the influenza vaccine have been increasingly waning. For the reason that we can expect the propaganda to be particularly fierce this year, the vaccine's track record has not fared well in the past. Consistently, it fails to meet the medical establishment's promises. This is no surprise. Quite simply, influenza or your flu vaccines, in my opinion, are horrible, ineffective, toxic drugs. I don't say that as a layperson. I say that as someone who is deeply experienced in reviewing the scientific literature. We can look back through the years and easily assess the clear evidence for why more and more people are skeptical about seasonal flu vaccination. Research indicates that during the fake swine flu scare of 2009, Glaxo's Pandemrix flu vaccine was associated with a 1,400 increase in narcolepsy risk. Quote, an incurable, debilitating condition, end quote, associated with acute brain damage. Yeah. A team of Finnish scientists at Finland's National Institutes of Health and Welfare recorded 800 cases of narcolepsy associated with just that fraudulent vaccine. Vaccine ingredients, other than the engineered viral antigen, are most often believed to be the primary culprits to adverse vaccine reactions. The Finnish research, on the other hand, indicated that the vaccine's altered viral nucleotide likely contributed to the sudden rise in sleeping sickness. Now, although that vaccine was pulled from the market, it should never have been approved and released in the first place. This is a classic case of regulatory negligence by health officials and the World Health Organization, which promulgates flu vaccines around the world. And like all vaccines, which are now commonly fast-tracked through government health regulatory bodies for rapid release upon the public, it should have been tested more thoroughly and more rigorously reviewed. And since the time of Edward Jenner's primitive inoculative experiments, his son died, by the way, to combat smallpox, and its countless aftermaths of deaths through the 19th century, modern vaccine science has failed to learn its lessons. The British government has paid out tens of millions of dollars to cover lawsuits that individual vaccine caused. Glaxo has never admitted its flu vaccine caused brain damage. It did. And this year's influenza vaccines will be different. For the first time, Sanofi will launch its Flublok on the public. This vaccine does not require the culturing of the virus in chicken egg medium. Instead, it is genetically modified with a particular type of baculovirus grown in caterpillar cells. A second new shot is Sequirus flucevlax that is grown on canine kidney cells. However, these will only be given to those 18 years and older, and one hopeful change is that 80% of vaccines will be mercury-free by next year. Today, tens of thousands of infants and toddlers and children and adults around the world are increasingly becoming victims of vaccine injury. No national debate is initiated because regulatory malfeasance within federal health agencies has aligned its interests with pharmaceutical profits rather than serving the public health. And we're repeatedly told the flu vaccine is completely safe and severe adverse effects are rare. Both are lies. But what standard is rarity determined? Jeremy Hammond notes that in Australia, 1 out of 100 children experience fever-induced seizures in the one vaccine season. And even if serious adverse effects of 1 in 100 is regarded as rare, health agencies undermine risk in order to meet vaccination compliance. For example, if you have any form of autoimmune condition or immune compromised condition, you shouldn't be getting in a vaccine, any vaccine. When was the last time that a nurse, a physician, a pharmacist set you down and asked for a detailed history of your health? How about never? It just doesn't happen. So if you had an immune compromised system and you got a vaccine, it could be substantially dangerous to you. Similar to the vaccine for human papillomavirus, or the HPV, flu vaccines are among the least effective vaccines on the market. An updated review of the vaccine conducted by the prestigious Cochrane Database Collaboration concluded that their findings should, quote, discourage the utilization of vaccination against influenza in healthy adults as a routine public health measure, end quote. That's a highly respected group telling you don't take the vaccine if you're healthy. Yet you haven't heard that anywhere. Repeatedly, we are told by health officials that the moral argument for its continued use is, quote, the greater good. That's nonsense, absolute nonsense. Although this imaginary good has never been defined scientifically, not once. According to Dr. Tom Jefferson at the Cochrane Collaboration, it makes little sense to keep vaccinating against seasonal influenza based upon the evidence. Jefferson has also endorsed more cost-effective and scientifically proven means of minimizing the transmission of flu, including regular washing of your hands, wearing masks. There's also substantial peer-reviewed literature showing, as I mentioned earlier in the program, that vitamin D can help strengthen the immune system. In fact, there was an article published by Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine scientist Dr. Peter Doshi in the British Journal of Medicine. In this article, Doshi questions the flu vaccine's paradigm, stating, quote, closer examination of influenza vaccine policy shows that although proponents employ the rhetoric of science, the studies underlying the policy are often of low quality and do not substantiate, I repeat, do not substantiate officials' claims. The vaccines might be less beneficial and less safe than have been claimed, and the threat of influenza appears overstated. Quote, that's what he said. In her investigation report, quote, the emerging risks of live virus and virus vectored vaccines, Barbara Fisher noted that the attenuated virus in the flu vaccine can shed and infect others for months after vaccination. Just remember, kid gets vaccinated, and now their nose is dripping, and they're touching their nose, And now they're touching a desk or a pencil or a doorknob or an icebox, you know, refrigerator door. Now you've put that environment in there. That's dangerous. That's how people cross-contaminate. The CDC acknowledges this risk and warns, quote, persons who care for severely immunosuppressed persons who require a protective environment should not receive that vaccine or should avoid contact with such a person for 7 days after receipt, given the theoretical risk for transmission of the live attenuated vaccine virus, end quote. Well, it's not theoretical. It's been proven. Dr. David Brownstein has noted that as far back as the 1999, the Journal of the American Medical Association reported increased risks of febrile disorders greater than placebo associated with the live vaccine. According to the FDA's literature on flu mist, the vaccine was not studied for immunocompromised individuals, yet it was administered to immunocompromised individuals and has been associated with acute allergic reactions, asthma, Guillain-Barré, and a high rate of hospitalizations among children 24 months, largely due to upper respiratory tract infections. Other adverse effects include congenital and genetic disorders, mitochondrial disorders, Lee syndrome, meningitis. And given this litany of vaccine dangers, it's highly unlikely the vaccine was removed simply for ineffectiveness. Yet, when has the CDC ever been truthful to the public? I don't know that it is possible to be truthful. In fact, one doctor found that half of the people in their hospital who had received the vaccine was having difficulties. So what we have is this, and you can read the rest of the article go to prn.fm. We have been led to believe that this year 80,000 Americans will die from the flu. That is an out-and-out, complete, total, fabricated lie. You can do the research for yourself. We have. Go to their own site. What they do is they conflate two issues, influenza and flu. They are not the same by any measure. Now, in just one year, and we tracked it for 20 years, and here's what we found. In 1 year where they were saying 36,000 Americans will die of the flu, no, it was 35,000 dying of influenza in anywhere from low hundreds, 200, 300, to 1,000 dying from the flu. In a country of 330 million people, to have 800 die from anything puts it at a completely statistically insignificant level. But if even as small as that number is, these are still people and they shouldn't die. Who are the people dying? Most often it's a very older person who is dying, who may be in a nursing home or assisted living center or in chronic care. Their immune system has collapsed. They were given a vaccine and they die. So even in telling us who is dying, they're never honest. What we have found is it actually can cause increased death and is not effective in older people, but they're not honest. I could give you a lot of things that could help you. In fact, I have in the past, and I'm sure many of you have taken notes of things that can help you. Echinacea, astragalus, pau d'arco, vitamin C, quercetin, green tea, olive leaf extract, wild oregano oil diluted, colloidal silver, black cumin seed oil, curcumin, green juices, chlorophyll, ginger, manuka honey, and lemon. All of these can strengthen your immune system. They're antiviral and antibacterial. Never once do you hear those mentioned. So when you look at the actual number of people dying from the flu and not from pneumonia, it's two different statistics. 98% has nothing to do with the flu. 1-2% does. That's how dishonest they've been. So if they told us the truth, no one would be taking the vaccine. And if we had a Surgeon General that actually had any sense of concern for the public's well-being, and not just a political position, they'd be out there advocating the juices, the diet, and talk about lifestyle that compromises your immune system. Because just imagine this, there really is no such thing as flu season. You could get the flu any month of the year, but you're less likely to get it when you're outside getting vitamin D in the summertime. When you're more likely to be exercising regularly outdoors, your immune system is stronger. When you're relaxing on vacation, generally in the summer, your immune system is stronger. So what happens in the fall? We come back to school, school teachers, students. There's a change in weather. Our body has to adapt to it. We start turning on indoor central heat. Out comes all the bacteria and molds that were resting and living inside the in the heating unit. All of these factors compound our chances of becoming sick and therefore making a virus that is around us more susceptible to our immune response. Finish reading the article and share it with others, please. It'll be posted in the next 2 hours. It's our newest one on vaccines. But also at the same time, please download and share with everyone our two articles that we've just posted in last week on the environment and the truth of it and how urgent it is that we not delay. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to come right into, from the break, into a person who's walking away from the left. Boy, the left is, right now, the corporate left is tone deaf. They're allowing the most extreme elements to be the focus, and they're going to alienate a lot of core people. So this is why pay attention to the canary in the coal mines, the people who are so extreme, so radicalized, that their actions do not represent the average Americans, and yet they're getting all the media attention. We'll have that when we come back, and then you can call in at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888, and share your comments.
Statement. Back in November, when all the controversy was happening around myself and Wilfrid Laurier University, I made it very clear that I saw myself as a leftist. So I was actually very genuinely confused when people were instantly accusing me of having a right-wing agenda or whatnot. I just kind of naturally saw myself as being a leftist. I was pro-environment. I believed in climate change. I was pro-gay marriage. I took the bus everywhere. I didn't have a car. So I guess just naturally, kind of without really thinking about it, I placed myself on the left of the political spectrum. Then, you know, I kind of stuck to that and still believed that throughout the whole controversy at Wilfrid Laurier University. But it's more recently, actually specifically the fallout from the Faith Goldie event that I helped organize as part of my club, the Laurier Society for Open Inquiry, that I realized I am not a leftist. So I realized finally, and you know, I'm tuning in now, but people have been well aware of this before I've announced it now. But what is the left now? They're pro-censorship, right? They are victimhood culture. They are all about moral righteousness. They're taught that claiming to be offended results in a moral victory. And Jonathan Rauch wrote this over 20 years ago in his book, Kindly Inquisitors. There's this victimhood mentality. They don't believe in personal responsibility. They are completely intolerant of diversity of thought, intolerant. They are humorless people. They want to make society boring, and they want to make it so that no one can do so much as make a joke. If you are not on their side 100%, they will slander you mercilessly. And it'd be funny if it weren't such a dirty trick. So, for example, they've released this photo of me standing beside two individuals at a crosswalk. And apparently, they're trying to make it so that because I stood beside these two individuals, I have absorbed the ideology of these two individuals, and I stand for what these individuals stand for. In this case, it's white nationalism, which I'm not. I'm not interested in white nationalism. So, an image like this, it would be very damaging for someone who wants to get a job in government, or social services, or who wants to work with children, right? If this image is out there of you, it's going to be damaging for your career. And so this is how the left tries to slander. They're trying to make it not okay to talk about issues like being white. Okay, I want to talk about those ideas neutrally. I don't have an agenda to push when it comes to that. But they're trying to make it so that you can't be neutral about it. It's either absorb.
All right, that was some of what she had to say. You can watch the rest of it because I want to get some calls in here. So here's a person who found that she was walking across the street. Someone took a picture, and now they're capturing her as being a part of an ideological movement when she's not. She was just crossing the street. And this is the problem, and this is the problem for the left and the right. I've told you that I do not support the right. I can't on any level because I find them at every level, and I've gone through this in the past. I've challenged them. I challenged Bush, if you remember, Ronald Reagan, if you remember, Bush Sr., if you remember, for hundreds, thousands of hours on air, I challenged them. And the people who would mindlessly support them. I challenged Trump, and I challenged people who were not willing to look at the consequences of Trump being unqualified to be president, a pathological liar, and then the people who are in power at any given time, the Mitch McConnells, the people who lack all human decency and do not care about the consequences. But they're not alone. And the reason that I pay more attention now to the left is because historically the left represented the Democrats. They represented the highest form of liberalism, which was what Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought forth and shared through his incredible programs. And that's what helped us, a lot of people, my parents and others, survive civil conservation corn. And then after the war, the rebuilding with low interest GI loans, 2% homes, and we had 35 years of prosperity, especially among the working class. That's the class I come from. Many of you do as well. And what has happened is that with starting with the Clintons mainly, we were sold out. The environmental movement was sold out. You have environmental groups, but they care more about themselves than they do the environment. And then the people of minority communities were sold out. The unions were sold out. NAFTA, GATT, CAFTA, Trans-Pacific Partnership all sold them out. The World Trade Organization sold them out. And the debt mongers sold out major corporations or corporations that were bought and then bankrupted. Tens of thousands by equity partners. I'll go into that in greater detail in an upcoming show. So people were confused because they were given promises that we would have universal health care. No promise. In fact, the moment that election was over, instead of going towards universal health care, all the meetings, over 47 meetings at the White House, were from the insurance executives. They wrote, they created Obamacare. As Clinton tried to create a form of Obamacare, when Hillary Clinton spent over $400 million meeting with over 500 representatives of the pharmaceutical industry, the hospital associations, and the insurance industry. It was all hidden from the public. What they were telling the public, they were doing just the opposite. And they're the ones who, they really destroyed the confidence in democratic processes. So then it became the worst of two evils. I don't believe we should be voting for the worst of evils. I don't believe we should be listening to the worst of two evils. I believe we should be listening to people who are willing to challenge those two, and that would be third-party candidates. And if we don't start supporting them and supporting populism, then we've got some major problems, which we do now, including the environment. So when a person chooses to have open discussion, especially college students, open discussions, civil conversations, bring your ideas, put them on the table, take your time, let us hear what you're about, and then we'll respond. We can agree or disagree, and we can do it without screaming at each other. That's not what's happening today. And coming from a very progressive background, I abhor identity politics. I'm going to judge you based upon the character of who you are, not the color of your skin, not your age, not your gender, sexual selection. That's your business, not mine. But now, depending upon, at first it was the conservatives. They wouldn't be allowed to lecture. Let them lecture. We could agree or disagree with what they say, but let's hear what they have to say. Nope. So suddenly everything became, you must be with us or you're against us. And it starts at the fringes and works in towards the center. And it's deadly. And she represents a massive amount of people who, I've interviewed them for my new film on the new Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? All these individuals were almost, to a person, former Democrats. They're not now, they're independents. And a lot of them voted for Trump out of anger. They were so angry because they'd been lied to. So they have at this moment the greater responsibility to show that they're not just going to be corporate shills doing the bidding of the lobbyists and the consultants that historically both parties have been captured by. That's why that woman's voice is important. We'll take calls. I don't have a monitor in front of me right now to see who's on the line, but I'll let just Jesse punch me up with someone. David, you're on. Your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Null. I really do appreciate the fact that you are an erudite man and that you gave some good historical background on almost all of your commentary. But I wanted to bring this point out, and I think it's imperative. You mentioned that the Democratic Party engages in identity politics. And I find that rather a divergent perspective, only because it's never seemed to mention that the Democratic Party seems to represent a much more broader aspect of American voters than the Republican Party does. And I'm saying you don't think that Trump engages in identity politics, and I've never seemed to understand why that word is not applied to him as it is applied to the Democratic Party.
Okay, I'll address that. That's a good question. Thank you. If you listen to this program with any regularity, you know that I have done numerous detailed, very well documented descriptions of what's wrong with Trump's policy before he became president, when he was president. I did an expose of all of the cabinet members he selected. I gave you the industries they came from, the positions they held in those industries. I do it now. If you go to my Facebook right now, go to Gary Null's Facebook, you'll see just today I posted about the new Secretary of the Interior and the association. This is a person that supports trophy hunting, that would call the great wolves that we don't need to, the Interior Department that is killing over 58,000 horses, rounding them up and killing them, that we don't need to. They serve a very important ecological balance. I'm reporting on the extremes and the inconsistencies. I talked about Bolton and all of his picks. He is a warmonger. I talk about the association between Trump and the neocons and the Newland family, but they play both sides. The Newland family, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Newland family, they're the most powerful family in Washington, D.C., more powerful than the President of the United States because they're the permanent family. Presidents come and go. They leave left behinds. They don't. She, the wife, ran the Russian office in the State Department, and she was the one who helped support the coup in Ukraine. the media said that it was Russia's coup. No, it wasn't. Russia wasn't trying to take over the Ukraine. No, that was we back the fascists. You hear me reporting about how Saudi Arabia is supported by this administration, and they're supporting terrorism. But Clinton supported terrorism. I've said to you that Clinton supported anybody who would give her foundation and her money. And we documented, and WikiLeaks' Julian Assange documented it. He's the one who gave us all those emails detailing this. I'm saying it very clearly, so please understand. Both parties have engaged nonstop in identity politics. Both. Both parties do not represent the average person. Neither. They haven't in at least 40 years. When Bush Jr. went into Iraq, we were the only radio show in the United States prior to it happening that detailed how the so-called special agent was actually a fool, meaning he had been tested, curveball. He was a fraud. And we detailed Halliburton and all the ways that they would benefit, and they did. I think $44 billion from being over there and how many lives would be lost. We've reported on both sides. But in the moral order today, it is always presumed, as you just said, that the Democrats are pro-union, pro-minority, pro-poor. They're not. Go to any place in America. Go to Detroit. You got a Democratic mayor, Ron Emanuel. Go to Los Angeles. Go to San Francisco. Go to Canton, New Jersey. These are now ghettos with isolated oases for the very rich. They're rich. And at a certain point in rich, politics is really meaningless. Power is everything. Show me a single city in the United States that's been de-ghettoized. I'm asking, show me one. You can't. It doesn't exist. Who put the most people out of the United States, deported them, and incarcerated them? Obama, over 4 million. Who put more people in prison by increasing penalties for drug possession? Clinton. Who had 3 strikes and you're out? Clinton's. All the things that you look at, who supported the Black Act or the Dark Act, which protected Monsanto? Obama. I have 100 things each one has done. They both supported Wall Street. They both supported offshore drilling. They both supported the pipeline, the XL pipeline. They both supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty, which would have destroyed unions completely. Everything you can think of that they could have done wrong, they did wrong. The difference is one group did it by pretending to still care for you, and the other doesn't make any pretense. Donald Trump has no manners, no morals, no ethics, no intelligence, no qualities. But the Democrats have shown that they would have done the same thing, except with a smile. Try to differentiate the difference between policies which are non-existent. Neither one wanted to forgive student debt. Both supported payday loans and exorbitant interest, and both supported the prison industrial profit system. Neither one was willing to stop home foreclosures. They both could have. They could have said no to the banks, no to quantitative easing, no to the $21 trillion they got out. That was Clinton and Obama. Then it was Trump. Neither party represents you, sir, or me. They only represent the rich and powerful. And they both have engaged in identity politics. And we, the American public, deserve better. And that's why I'm suggesting look for the idealist. Look for people who have no experience in politics to be the next standard bearers coming forward. There's a lot of good people. 112 million people are independent. At one point, they were all either Democrat or Republicans. 112 million of us. We just haven't organized yet. We are. Go to prn.fm and see how we're organizing and trying to make a difference. Thank you very much for your calls. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.